The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Welcome to our program, Aging, a New Reality, a show that provides insight into many of the concerns that seniors have during their journey in later years. We talk to experts who will share their knowledge on subjects such as finances, nutrition, housing, and health. On today's program, we will hear the second part of Madeline Corelli's interview with Sandy Maxwell, Senior Policy and Program Strategist with the Ontario Public Health Association. And now, here's Madeline.
I'd like to welcome back Sandy Maxwell for our part two on the importance of nutrition and aging. Sandy, we had such a good conversation about the best foods to eat and supplements and the value of supplements and the value of frozen vegetables and frozen fruit. And I wondered if there's any suggestions about when to eat. When is the best time to eat a meal? Or any of our meals?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. And there's getting to be more and more attention around, you know, specifically the concept of intermittent fasting. And I'm just going to focus on that a little bit, because I think that's where a lot of this is coming from. This question of, you know, at what point in the day to eat or not to eat. So, yeah, and I guess, you know, I've even seen healthcare providers recommending this eating pattern. So it is gaining a lot of popularity, and it can be for reasons around weight or increasing brain function, among other things. So for those that maybe aren't familiar, typically intermittent fasting allows people to eat during an 8-hour window of time, and then they fast for 16 hours, although there are different variations. There is a lot of promising research on this pattern of eating. However, I'm a little cautious of all of the health claims. So they're basically at this point based on animal studies. Mm. So, and as I was saying earlier, that it can take a lot of time and study to confidently state the effects of a particular dietary pattern on humans. And then there's, again, the issue of which individuals were studied, and can that apply to, you know, others? Can it apply to all ages or varying health status? But in terms specifically of intermittent fasting, so far the results in human studies have mixed results, but it is definitely an area of research that will be continued to be explored. And I'm quite interested in seeing the results. I think, again, you know, a lot of the premise is that over time, we as humans didn't have access to food 24/7. So we were limited just based on the fact that we had to gather and hunt for and prepare food that couldn't keep. We didn't have refrigerators, right? We didn't have stores at all hours. And our health, you know, we had different health issues, but part of our health issues now relate to overconsumption of certain foods. And maybe it is, you know, the fact that we're consuming food 24/7. Yes. We don't know yet. I don't know that, you know, definitively we can give recommendations, but I think it's definitely something to be aware of. And in terms of other factors or other recommendations around food combining and times of eating, I don't think, again, that there's enough evidence right now to land on for recommendations, but definitely an area that I'm quite interested to hear more from research in the future.
And what about the idea of eating a main meal at noon and much lighter meal in the evening so that you're not bloated in the evening?
From sort of a logical perspective, that does make a lot of sense. And again, thinking back to our physical expenditures of energy, mm-hmm. when our, you know, thinking about farmers and others back, you know, before we were industrialized, mm-hmm. that we needed that energy and fuel in the afternoon. So again, our habits and our lifestyles have changed so much. I don't know that there's enough evidence to say we should be eating that larger meal in the middle of the day. But I think the other piece is, and I mentioned this earlier too, is to be more aware of what our bodies are telling us and how we're feeling. And if we're feeling after an evening meal that's a heavier meal, heavy and uncomfortable and sleepy, and maybe that's a signal that that's not the best thing for us.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Good point. So last time we talked about our immune system, and you talked about, you know, the fruits and the vegetables and the protein, et cetera, and grain as being immune boosters. What are the foods that actually not only don't benefit our immune system, but detract from our ability to face disorders, diseases that are out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we talked about the gut microbiota and how we're seeing it have impact on all the body systems, and including mental health and immune system. And the fact that it requires both positive nutrients and antioxidants and the fermentation of fiber in the gut and, you know, growing those good bacteria, but also limiting the foods that might suppress those good bacteria and that might, be the ones that are giving us all of those, you know, harmful, for lack of a better word, you know, sort of toxic ingredients. So that's sort of a category that is now being referred to as ultra processed foods. It includes fast foods, industrialized bakery products, bread products, foods that are ready to be eaten or put into, you know, a microwave and eaten. So they're not really being prepared from whole ingredients. Mm-hmm. And they could be, again, they could have some of those pieces of whole foods in them, but they aren't, you know, they're just these ingredients. They're kind of put together. And so that's where we're seeing. And it could be a result of a lot of different things. It could be the additives that are put in. It could be the things that have been stripped away. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's a good enough understanding about all of the impacts of these foods. But when a person's diet has a higher number of those compared to those minimally processed foods, that's when we're seeing more issues with, again, the smaller hippocampus in the brain and potentially some impacts on memory and mood and so on.
Gosh, there's so much to think about, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Just overwhelmed by a lot of the information, because I read packaging faithfully to see what's in there, and I try to eat the food that doesn't say a gazillion amounts of sugar and saturated fat in it. But there's so much else. It's all those additives and preservatives as well that we don't even know really how they affect us, do we?
Right. Well, and I think that's why, and I'm really happy with the update that was made to Canada's Food Guide in 2019, that really does capture our whole eating pattern. So it can be overwhelming to think about all these different elements of food, but I like how Canada's Food Guide addresses, you know, focusing as best we can on those whole foods, limiting those other foods, being more mindful of how we're eating, still wanting to enjoy food. I mean, we don't want it to be so technical that we're just, you know, spending hours reading labels and we're not actually enjoying the whole process of eating. So there is a balance to all of that, but, you know, it's important to be educated, I think, and to be, you know what we're putting in our bodies.
Absolutely. I did have a question about muscle mass, because I know that especially if you don't exercise, with weight bearing exercise, we lose muscle mass as we age. Is there a way of using nutrition to boost muscle?
Yes. So I'm glad you brought that up. So the term for the age related muscle loss is called sarcopenia, and it is normal to lose muscle mass as we age. However, sarcopenia describes the more severe muscle loss that strays from the norm. And it has significant effects on a person's ability to walk and balance themselves and their overall ability to perform daily tasks. So for a long time, researchers have believed that this deterioration was inevitable, but now they're beginning to look into treatments that prevent or slow the process. You did mention physical activity, which is still a key piece. We know that a common cause of sarcopenia is decreased physical activity that often happens with age. However, other factors are being studied, such as lowering of hormone levels in the body, a reduction in the nerve cells that send signals from the brain to tell the muscles to move, mm-hmm. and a decline in the body's ability to convert protein to energy. So we've also seen now, though, a critical role for dietary intake of protein, which stands to reason as muscles are made of protein. Mm-hmm. But what we don't know is the optimal dose and type of protein. But there's right. also promising data around the role of vitamin D and minerals such as selenium and magnesium and omega-3 fatty acids. So interestingly, a recent study was able to attribute following the Mediterranean diet with a higher, which we know has a higher consumption of fruits and vegetables, being associated with improved physical performance and protection against muscle wasting.
Really? So, why would that be?
I know. That's so interesting. Again, it's just the body's complex interrelated systems and reactions. So I don't know that that's really understood the mechanisms, but again, so those key micronutrients and protein, we're seeing a relationship, which again, I feel in often, you know, it stands to reason that there's more benefits from these wholesome foods than we even know. And I think it just shows us that we're just continuing to learn how having, you know, a healthy, balanced diet focused on these nutrient dense foods really do protect every part of our body. But I just want to also highlight that in the case of supplements, so in some cases with sarcopenia, supplements are recommended. Mm-hmm. So that could be protein along with those key micronutrients. But again, that would be something more on an individual level based on a person's, you know, specific situation. But from a prevention point of view, the Mediterranean diet looks like it's there's another plus.
Wow. That's interesting. So interesting. Mm-hmm. I wish I liked fish more, but I'm not crazy about it.
You are listening to Aging, a New Reality on Northumberland 89.7. And now we return to Madeline Corelli and her guest, Sandy Maxwell.
I'm thinking about today, in the last couple of weeks, we've heard that the cost of living has really gone through the roof. And food prices, we're looking at somewhere around 8% increase in the price of food. So I'm feeling very certain that older adults are thinking very, very worried about this because they have no earning potential left. So they can't find a job necessarily to increase their earning. And if you're on a fixed income, how can you make sure that the food that you're eating is quality and is nourishing your brain and your body?
Yeah, that's definitely an issue that we're all facing, these rising food prices, and certainly concerning for many populations. I would first like to say, though, you know, when we talk about affording food, I always like to first kind of mention the issue of food insecurity and poverty, mm-hmm. that they are serious issues impacting health and well-being of our population.
Yes.
And food insecurity specifically, which is inadequate access to food because of financial constraints, it is a serious public health concern, and it's associated with several negative health outcomes and as well higher healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. And incidents, we know most recent data shows that food insecurity affects 13% of households in Ontario, but this jumps to 59% of Ontario households receiving social assistance.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. So the solution is really policies that increase incomes through jobs, but also, you know, jobs with livable wages and benefits and social assistance rates that truly reflect the cost of living and of course, a basic income guarantee. So that's kind of a, like to kind of ground discussions around food prices with that. But interestingly, Canadian seniors over 65 years and older actually experience lower rates of food insecurity than other population groups. And that is due to the guaranteed income, income supplement and old age security they receive. So hopefully that's always going to be maintained to the point where this is the case. But just in terms to answer your question about rising food prices and stretching food dollars, it's important for everyone to know how to do that, I think. And there's some great tips from a website called Love Food, Hate Waste. It's from the National Zero Waste Council. And it's all about, you know, tips for planning, using, and keeping food fresh. There is a significant amount of food waste that takes place in our country, and a lot of it is preventable. So they have a great portion planning tool. This is key for adults who might have been used to cooking for a family and now might be cooking for one. So this portion planning tool helps adjust, you know, how do you prepare smaller or more appropriate amounts of pasta and rice, for example. They give tips for how you quickly can freeze extra portions. And we mentioned leaning on frozen vegetables, planning two meals at a time with the same ingredients. Also how to understand best before dates. You know, we often throw food out thinking it's spoiled when in fact it isn't. You know, best before dates often just apply to freshness, not safety. So being aware of that is really key. And then using foods that are likely to spoil, such as dairy products and the ready-to-eat meals or meats and so on, there to be, you know, used as quickly as possible. And even after grocery shopping, refrigerating or freezing meat, poultry, shellfish right away. So there's all kinds of really great tips.
That's great. I'm going to look that up.
Well, and storage, I mean, you think about buying produce and how quickly they can spoil. And if something really is best on a counter versus in the fridge or being separated versus, you know, like taking lettuce and maybe washing it, how much longer you can have it last. So those kind of tips, which, you know, you might think are intuitive and as an older adult would have that knowledge. We don't want to assume anything. And, you know, it's just good to be aware. I mean, I love when I get to the grocery or come home from the grocery store being kind of aware of what I have so that next time I go, I don't find something rotted in my fridge.
Or back at the back somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
for sure. For sure. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about those living alone. And I know there are both men and women living on their own, but we know also predominantly it is senior women who end up living alone and cooking a meal for one. If you're a single person trying to cook for yourself, what's the best way of providing nourishing and appealing meals when really you're not cooking for people anymore? You're cooking for yourself, and that can be a little boring.
Absolutely. Well, I would say the first thing is to be kind to oneself and not to have unrealistic expectations of preparing elaborate meals every day. I mean, preparing food for a family is different than preparing food for oneself. And I think just kind of adjusting to those expectations and then also, you know, capitalizing on days when energy and motivation is high and maybe, you know, spending the extra time preparing something that's more involved and then freezing, you know, extra portions. Also eating with others when possible does really help. I mean, it helps with motivation and enjoyment and even sharing the workload of planning meals together, creating shopping lists, even getting groceries together. And it's also okay just to keep things simple. So when motivation is low or there's just not a lot of interest in putting together a meal, there's a lot of very simple, nutritious things that could be as basic as starting with toast and having toast with peanut butter and a piece of fruit, you know, toast with a boiled or scrambled egg or cheese or mashed avocado, and having a bowl of yogurt with frozen fruit on top. Overnight porridge is another quick and satisfying meal. I rely on porridge so much, actually. You know, just change it up with different fruits and different toppings, but again, very quick and nutritious and satisfying. So, and I think it's for those that might really be struggling when eating is a real challenge, it is important to seek help from one's healthcare team, because if it's let go for so long to the point where there is actually malnutrition, that's so much more difficult to deal with and correct. Whereas if it is, you know, a case of just, you know, losing a bit of weight or just not having much appetite or interest, it's best to have a team approach to kind of work on strategies and, you know, prevent things from getting too far.
For sure. So I just want to sum up a little bit, because I don't want people to lose sight of where to go to get more information. And you mentioned your health providers, and that can be a variety of health providers, but especially a registered dietitian, because they're so knowledgeable and can really perhaps customize what's best for the person depending on their own nutritional needs and health needs. And you also mentioned Canada's Food Guide as being a really good source for recipes and planning around food. And you also mentioned Love Food, Hate Waste, and that website as a very good site for people to go to on, you know, particularly on how to make sure that you are not wasting your food, but you know how to freeze it and reuse it after the fact as well. Is there any other site that you'd like to mention, or did I kind of capture the right ones?
There is another one. It's from Dietitians of Canada, and it's called unlockfood.ca.
Unlockfood.
Yeah, it's a consumer website that provides general healthy eating guidance on all kinds of issues and topics with throughout the lifespan. So, you know, even over adults who might want information on how to feed a grandchild who comes for a visit, yes, or, you know, right, there's all kinds of current information. It's really quite, it's evidence-based and up-to-date. And yeah, so really great articles there. And you can even get on a mailing list, you know, to get updates. And yeah, so that's another
Super. Thank you. Those are great. And what a wonderful topic to cover in today's world, where we know that supply chains are having problems, and that, you know, food production in various parts of the world are stalled and unable to continue. I think this is so topical and so important for the well-being. And of course, I'm emphasizing well-being for our seniors, but it's truly well-being for everybody. I'm so grateful to you for taking the time to do this interview. Thank you so much.
Well, it was my pleasure, and it's a passion of mine. And as you said, it's really important for everyone to be cognizant of the benefits of nutrition, and not only for our physical health, but our mental health.
So important. Really, I can't think of anything that's more important. So your passion
is the
right place. Thank you so much. I so appreciate your time, Sandy.
Well, you're very welcome.
You have been listening to Madeline Corelli talking with Sandy Maxwell, Senior Policy and Program Strategist with the Ontario Public Health Association. Be sure to listen next week at this time, when Madeline will be in conversation with another expert on a topic that will help us deal with aging, a new reality, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. Interviews in this series are conducted by Madeline Corelli, technical assistance by Trevor Joyce, production by Kevin Stewart, Olivia Waldrop, and Paige Johnston. Executive producer is Barry Walker. The preceding program has been a co-production of Northumberland 89.7 FM and the Community Training and Development Centre.